Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to Government vs. the Robots, the fortnightly podcast that takes a look at how technology will influence politics in the future. I'm Jonathan Tanner and this week I'll be talking to Meevan Babakar. Meevan is the head of automated fact-checking at the fact-checking charity Full Fact. She also founded Citizen Beta and the volunteering website Who's In, which you'll hear more about in a moment. How could real-time fact-checking transform political debates? Would journalists be more able to hold politicians to account if they had access to a real-time fact database? And is it time that Government vs. the Robots listeners became fact-checkers themselves? First off, Meevan, can you introduce yourself to everybody?
Hi, my name is Meevan Babakar and I'm head of automated fact-checking at Full Fact.
And what's Full Fact?
Full Fact is the UK's independent fact-checking charity. We've been around for quite a while, actually, since 2010.
And what do you do day to day?
Yeah, so it's a good question. Mostly we're really tired because there's been a lot of elections and referendums recently. But in the short term, Full Fact gives people the information they need to be able to make up their own minds on important issues. It's very easy to be overwhelmed with the number of people claiming things, politicians, the media. And it's our job to give you the information and the research that you would do if you had the time to check it.
Before we get into talking more about Full Fact and facts, What did you do before you joined Full Fact?
So, way back at university, I was a bioengineer. And then I joined an organisation that got young people registered to vote. Then I joined Cancer Research in the digital team for a while. And then I joined Full Fact in 2014.
And Full Fact's not your only gig, right?
No, I do a lot of stuff on the side. I'm a busy person. So I also run a civic tech meetup in London called Citizen Beta. And that's about 500 people who gather once a month to talk about technology and how it's affecting our lives and politics and government.
And who's in?
And who's in, yes. I forget about the other stuff. So I also am starting a platform for volunteering, basically for one-off volunteering. At the moment, volunteering is very hard to get into. You have to sign up with a charity and it's often something you have to do over a period of months to build a relationship. And what we're trying to do is gather all the one-off volunteering events that happen in London as a start. To lower the barrier to entry to volunteering.
And where can people find out more about that?
Whosin.io.
Cool. Yeah. Where did the idea come from for that?
Full Fact. So I was, for the 2015 general election, running our volunteering and also our crowdfunding at the same time. And the crowdfunding was relatively simple in that the systems were there. It was like, make a good case and people donate. Whereas the volunteering was really difficult. I was organising about 120 people and the systems weren't there. The tools weren't there. It was all kind of slapdash. It was about Google Forms and emails and it was really hard to keep track of everyone. And it was hard to get people on board. So I kind of wondered a few weeks after the election, why can't we marry the crowdfunding mechanics for volunteering? It was pretty much a similar kind of thing. I needed 100 or so volunteers, but it was a lot harder to get them than it was the crowdfunders.
If you cast your mind back to when you joined Full Fact, what made you want to do it?
I've always been really interested in powerlessness and how intrinsically there are some people who feel more confident in being a part of the democratic process than others. And I've always wondered whether the unbalance in access to information is a part of that. I think it's also partly about how assertive you are as an individual, like how much you feel you know, whether you're financially stable actually has been proven to be a part of whether you want to get involved or not. If you're just trying to meet rent, you're not going to be worrying about protesting or like signing a petition. You have other things to be worrying about. So I've always been interested in the imbalances that exist. And for me, Full Fact was a really great, not very party political way of getting involved in something democratic. And that's the things that I've always done in my career so far have always been about democracy, not necessarily party politics.
So it seems fairly obvious, particularly after the last couple of years, to say that facts are political. But can you give me your version of facts are political, which is to say, you know, we're here to talk about how, in the bigger scheme of things, how technology will influence politics in the future. And technology is obviously influencing how people interpret and distribute facts. But why is it, you know, when I say facts are political, why do you nod in agreement?
Well, I was actually going to say, why do you think facts are political? I'm really interested in your opinion on that, actually.
Because I think they've always been a part of political discourse.
Mm-hmm.
This is very hard to build an argument without using any evidence.
Yep.
And I think my sense is also that facts become political the minute they leave the page, whether they are inanimate in and of themselves. The way they are used is inherently political the minute you pick up a number, because say that number's 40%, you know, in some people's minds that's nearly half, depending on the argument they want to make, and in another one it's just less than half. And it's just that those little twists inevitably become part of political discourse. So I guess that's my answer as to why, but do you agree?
So I agree that there are some statistics that, or facts, as I guess we have to separate those two things out. Statistics specifically can be picked and cherry-picked in certain ways to build certain narratives. So if I wanted to tell you that the NHS was in crisis, I could definitely paint a very vivid story using the number of junior doctors or A&E crisis figures and only pick the ones that represent my view. But I might be missing out this whole other part of the story as a result. And what Full Fact's job is to put back in the shades of grey when people are making it out to be black and white. And so facts can be political, absolutely, when you cherry pick them and you paint one particular story. But I also think that when you have the full context and the full picture, that's really when political debate can begin. Because then everybody is looking at the full spectrum of information and then having a debate off the back of that.
And just quickly, how would you define the difference between facts and stats?
I think stats are types of facts, but I think we have several philosophers in our office that would argue that till kingdom come. So I don't really think it's that big a distinction. They're just bits of information and they can be used in various ways.
And do you think that it is possible to ever to have the whole picture? Because it sort of feels to me sometimes like in the world of political debate, you can just drop a fact on top of a fact, or you can drop a sentiment on top of a fact. And you know, these arguments, I've worked in and around politics for kind of 15 years, these arguments are inevitably circular, and there's always something that a good debater, and a lot of politicians are good debaters, can add to a conversation. So do you think it is ever possible to kind of approach a subject from the point of perfect information?
Yeah, I don't really think it's about perfect information. I actually think it's about not being misled, like purposefully misled. That's what I find the most frustrating. An example is poverty statistics. Jeremy Corbyn and Theresa May will get up at PMQs, Prime Minister's Questions, and they will say, one of them will say poverty is going down and the other one will say poverty is actually rising, and they'll just go back and forth for a while saying that and nothing else. And the fact of the matter is that there are two measures of poverty in the country: relative poverty and absolute poverty. One is going up, one is going down, so they're both right. But the picture that it leaves everybody with is that, why don't they know what's happening with poverty statistics? Like, how could it be possible that there are two measures, or how could it be that they both think the opposite things? And then people lose faith in that system altogether, or trust in that system altogether. And I think that's what I dislike most, is when people are being, information is cherry-picked and people are being misled as a result.
What's the, which one's going up and which one's going down, relative and absolute poverty?
I can't remember, because I work at a fact-checking organisation. I won't pretend I know.
You have to move on.
Yeah.
Okay. I wonder which one it is. Maybe we should check the fact, because I'm very obviously poverty is a big thing in international development, which we were saying just before we started recording the episode. Is where my day job is, and I think in a way it's very hard. It would be hard to ever get rid of relative poverty, because it's a kind of human concept, and in a lot of ways it's a good thing that it exists, because it says that people in the world recognize that others have a lot less, and recognize that that's something often that they want to do something about. So but I suspect in Britain at the moment absolute poverty may be increasing and relative poverty may be decreasing as general standards of living fall.
But it kind of raises an interesting question about what we measure and why we measure it, and what actually that is informing in our politics. I think a lot of people overlook the fact that we have made inherently political choices in the things that we choose to measure. We actually know more about our golf courses than we do crime. And that's kind of crazy to be in a world like that. And I think that these choices are being made, and they're being made at a level where they're not being scrutinized either. So I think that if anything, it should be something that is more debated.
What sort of things do we know about our golf courses?
We know like the numbers of them, and like how many people frequent them, how often, like how many, just a lot more information than really is necessary.
People that play golf, I think, tend to be quite into their statistics. Yeah. So maybe that explains that. We touched on this a moment ago, but my question I've got written here is, are facts really facts? In that the truth is something that people can perceive differently. People can have their own versions of the truth, even based on the same information. I wonder how you might describe a fact if you were to go about trying to describe a fact.
So I totally agree with you that there are different versions of the truth, and people have their own personal truths, and that's very true. I think there are abstractions that we try to make, and maybe a good example is people's wages. Just because the average wage has fallen by, let's say, 5,000. I don't know if that's true, but let's say if it's fallen by 5,000.
Nobody check that fact.
Nobody check it, please. But if it has theoretically, then who is the average person? There is really no such thing as the average person. It might mean that somebody living in the, I don't know, West End has actually got a pay rise of 20,000, and somebody else has lost their job entirely. It's not that 5,000 has been knocked off across the board. So I think sometimes our numbers are inadequate at telling us the full spectrum of stories that exist, and we need to get much more better, nuanced information that can paint those stories for us in a more vivid way that lets us make better policies in the long run and better choices in the long run. But for me, the facts, the statistics are abstractions that try to tell us that. And sometimes they do their job well, and sometimes they do their job badly.
So I'm going to ask you in a moment how we can do a better job with facts. But first off, just to kind of prove your point, one of my favourite facts is that the word factoid actually means something which is not a fact. But most people would use it to describe a fact. But
small
the
fact,
oid
yeah.
means it's a kind of deviation from a fact, which perhaps explains kind of the way that people consume information, and perceived facts become truths even when they're not. So a factoid, next time someone gives you a factoid, you can perhaps irritatingly tell them that it is false if it's a factoid.
But so I think this is a really important thing that you've hit on, though, is because I don't want fact-checking to be, oh, hey, you were wrong about that thing, and therefore you're a terrible person. I think it's not about fact-checking people's individual conversations between them and their friends. I think pub conversations should be full of crap, and that should continue forevermore. But I think when there are people in positions of power, or are officials, or leaders of states, whatever, telling us specific things and no one is holding them accountable, I think that's the place where fact-checking can do a lot of good, and journalism does a lot of good, and actually there has to be people asking. And we know for a fact, we call it the they know we check effect in the office. Just the act of picking up the phone, calling them and saying, hey, where did you get that number from? Makes them understand that there will be someone next time who will do that again, and then they're a bit more cautious about using that. We've got stories like that from all over the political spectrum, people telling us that actually just asking has made a big difference.
Anybody who's nodding their head in agreement while they're listening might want to check out an episode from the Data for Development Festival of Government versus Robots, where we spoke to the head of the Office of National Statistics about the importance of stats in public policy making. But Mivan, I want to ask you, how do you even go about checking a fact? What is the basic process by which you guys at Full Fact will kind of look at something somebody said and check it for accuracy?
It's a good question. So we first monitor a lot of the day's media, things that have come up in TV shows or newspapers. At the moment, I think we're on a front pages kick. So we're going through those. And when there is a claim that is made that has national value, actually affects people's lives and is important enough to check, we will go about checking it. So the first thing that we do when we check something is call the person who made the claim, and we will ask them, where did you get your numbers from? And that's like non-negotiable for us. We do that every single time, because we don't want to assume, and we want to understand how it went wrong, or if it went wrong at all, it might be totally correct. That's another part of fact checking. We sometimes tell people that's actually true, and that's an important part of it too. After we find out where they got their information, we will go to that data source, and we will do the analysis ourselves, and we will see if that claim stacks up, basically. If it does stack up, we will write our fact check. If it doesn't stack up and there's more nuance that has been left out, what we'll do is we'll call the experts in the country, the people who actually created that data set, and we will do the analysis that was required to get to the right number or to get to the right story. Or if there are multiple versions of the truth, like you were getting at earlier, our job is to actually say, here are the multiple versions of the truth, and here is how they're different, and which one speaks most to you. It's your choice. You make up your own mind on this. And then there are some instances where actually we don't have data to prove the thing that they were saying. And in that case, what we'll do is say that there isn't enough statistics here. There isn't enough data, and we'll actually call up the people who are the data providers, like the Office of National Statistics, or sometimes in the NHS, and we'll ask them, why isn't this data available? And usually that leads to a succession of conversations where they go, oh, we thought that was available. We'll do something about that. And actually, that's a really big part of our job as well, is actually figuring out where the holes and gaps are in the ecosystem.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
What's been your favorite fact check, for better or for worse, in the time that you've been at Full Fact?
Oh, the problem is I haven't been in the fact-checking or editorial team for a while now, because my job is doing the tech part of it. But one of my favorite ones, now that I think back, is that I think it was a Liberal Democrat candidate said that crime had fallen, I think it was by about 10% as a result of their policies, when actually it had fallen by something like 25%. So they had like wildly underestimated their own efficacy of their policy, which is just so not the general trend of a fact check. Usually it's often the other way around. It's exaggerated in the opposite way.
I don't know if that reflects well on the candidate or not.
I don't know.
You mentioned that your job at the moment is to do the tech side of things, and you are head of AI fact checking.
Mm-hmm.
So can you tell us a little bit about how AI is being used in Full Facts to check facts?
Yeah, so I call it automated fact checking because the machine learning and AI elements are still kind of very much researchy. But there's a lot of like technology elements to it. So just kind of media monitoring elements to it. So because I've seen the fact checking team grow and do their work, within that, there are four parts of fact checking, really. It's the monitoring, it's the spotting of something to check, it's the checking, and then the publishing. And within each of those bits, there are things or tools that we can build that can scale those efforts or speed up those efforts. So my job is to find those parts and actually build a tool that helps them do more faster.
And so what are you doing at the moment?
So one of the things that we started building first was a tool called Live, which helps us do live fact checking. Usually we would take our entire team into a newsroom and they would, within minutes, live fact check something that a candidate had just said on the stage, usually during a referendum or election. And that required all of our fact checkers to remember what the latest piece they had written on was, where they got that data. And actually, that was quite a grueling process because it was a lot of remembering. It was a lot of double checking. But the only reason they could do that was because of their experience and expertise that they had gained in the past few years. So Live, our live fact checking tool, instead of having everybody there, gets the subtitles in real time or the speech in real time. And then it takes every single sentence and matches it against our database of fact checks. And so in real time, it says, here is the best available fact check that goes against this sentence or this claim that was just made. So all of a sudden, we don't need our most experienced fact checkers in the room anymore. It could be anyone who is willing to get in there and do some live fact checking. And then the second, more recent mode is actually using Office for National Statistics data. So we're really privileged in the UK to have really great data. And our Office for National Statistics is actually doing really, really great work. They're building a machine-readable API that actually allows us in real time to take a sentence, parse it out, so be like, here's the noun, verb, etc. And then in real time, go to the GDP figures or inflation figures or unemployment figures and generate a graph for the person right then and there. So if you imagine that you're in a press conference and you're a journalist, you could potentially have this app open and in real time it will do speech to text. So you get the sentences as they're being said, and in real time it will go to the ONS, generate a graph right then and there. So if they're saying something that you know isn't true, you can push back in real time instead of going to your desk.
All of which sounds absolutely fabulous from a kind of quality of democracy point of view. How many people know that these tools are out there? I know they're in their infancy, but kind of, you know, it's one thing being able to do this. It's another thing being able to do it and use it to drive accountability.
Mm-hmm. So at the moment, we've only really been building, we've had the money to have a tech team for like 9 months. So it's still very much in its infancy. I actually just released them properly at the Global Fact Checking Conference, which happened last week. So that's the first time that we're inviting other fact checkers around the world to use them. So at the moment, it's just Full Fact that is using it.
Who do you hope might use it in the future?
We're already working with Africa Check in South Africa and Chequeado in Argentina. I was talking to Boom, which is a fact checking outfit in India, and one in the Philippines as well called Rappler. So there are a lot of them that have like popped up in the past few years, and they all suffer the same pain points as we do. So live fact checking is a really big part of that for a lot of people. So I'm hoping that they will all become the first users of the live fact checking tool.
And how would you, in an ideal world, in, I don't know, 2 to 3 years time, like to see this tool being used?
I'd like to see it being used by a lot of fact checkers to do live fact checking. I'd also like to see it being used by journalists who are in that press conference scenario in real time, pushing back against officials. Yeah, and also maybe, is a controversial opinion, by politicians who are expected to know everything at once. Like, maybe we should equip them with the statistics in real time so that they could do a better job. That's a thought. I don't necessarily know if we have an opinion on that, but I do think politicians have a really hard job, and maybe we should equip them with better information.
So, I mean, I agree with you, especially having kind of watched politicians work over the last decade. It's very hard to be on top of every single fact. In fact, I think it's impossible to be on top of every single fact. And so often things go unchallenged that probably deserve to be challenged.
Yeah.
But if you had, let's say that this vision comes true and actually you have a pretty effective fact checker that's kind of on tap for anybody involved in a serious political conversation, ban it from the pub. And you could end up in a bit of a kind of ding-dong of, well, my fact says this and your fact says that and my fact says this. And actually, we know that a lot of what drives people's political decision-making or people's political affiliations is around sentiment and emotion and instinct. Mm. So how important to overall political outcomes do you think more accurate checking of facts could be?
To overall political outcomes?
Do you think if we all had access to perfect stats, we'd get different results in elections?
No, I don't think so. I do think that... yeah, obviously emotions play a really big part in how we choose to vote, and personalities play a big part in how we choose to vote. But I think when it comes to issues that you really care about and you make the time to understand about, which isn't necessarily everything, you do want to know what is going on. A lot of junior doctors right now care a lot about what is happening with the NHS and its funding, but a lot of people have strong feelings about the NHS. And I think that it's important that when those feelings become something else and you want to have access to good information, you should have easy access to it. Because at the moment, it's really obscure. It's really hard to find those figures. And I guess the argument that we're making is that it shouldn't be hard. That if you want figures, you should have access to figures. If you want to understand how many people are in poverty right now, you should be able to have that at your fingertips.
And I think it's worth pausing on the power of some of the automated fact-checking that you're talking about. So I was reading a Washington Post article in which you were quoted about, I think it was from the conference last week, where you spoke in the speech to the line, unemployment is going down, and the fact-checker kind of pulled up a graph straight away to check that.
Yeah.
Which is amazingly transformative if you think about how it could be used in election debates or in hustings. And you know, even the live leadership debates in the British prime ministerial contest.
Yeah.
In terms of getting there, have you been working with any other tech companies or?
Nope. We've been doing this entirely ourselves, and actually building tech as a charity. I wouldn't recommend it. It's very hard. This could have very easily been done as a startup, and it could have had a whole different trajectory. But we believe that actually this is technology that should be built from the charity and as a non-profit, and there is value in doing it that way too, even though it is harder.
And Full Fact does work with some of the big tech firms, if you kind of put, or social media firms, Facebook I think being one example.
So we have had funding through the Google Digital News Initiative, which was an open process, and we applied for some money for. And actually Google prototype funding was the first money that we got to build these tools. And then we've also got money from Omidyar and Open Society Foundations as well to build those tools some more. During the election that just passed, Facebook gave us 50,000 ad credits specifically to push out good information on the Facebook platform. But that's pretty much it in terms of money.
Do you think companies like Google and Facebook are doing a good job of kind of getting their heads around how to try and address the abuse of facts in public discourse?
I think it's very hard to know what a good job is right now, because nobody really understands the scale of the different issues at play. And there are a lot of different issues, let's be honest. Like, there's all the way from someone is wrong on the internet to election interference to abuse of power to radicalization, right? And this is a huge spectrum of stuff to be working across. I know they care very deeply about Facebook, at least, about things like hate speech, which they've spoken very openly about. And Google has spoken about advertising and how it's being more rigorous with its advertising, and Facebook has done the same. But obviously there are some choices that shouldn't be made in the terms and conditions of tech platforms, like political advertising, for example, that should be decided through an open democratic process by the people who are in power. And I think it's important that we don't, by default, let those choices be made by Google and Facebook, and we take an active part in them.
You give me a good opportunity to plug the Government versus the Robots episode on political advertising.
It's a good one.
Which talks about all sorts of issues in the way that politicians use adverts, not least the fact that there is no existing regulation around political advertising at all. You can pretty much say what you want, put what you want. It doesn't matter if it's true or not. So do go and have a listen to that if you're interested in political advertising. Is there anything that Facebook or Google could do easily, in your view, that they should do and they're not?
I could talk about it in the context of the second tool that we're building, which is called Trends. And what that does, it spots every single time a claim that we have already checked is repeated. And at the moment, it is looking at the newspapers in the UK. It's looking at BBC on TV, and it's looking at everything said in Parliament and specific pages on Facebook. So I can show you a pretty cool graph, actually, of the 350 million a week goes to the EU and all the times that it was repeated in the UK. It's a good graph because you can see during the election it was quite big, and then it kind of went away. And then when Boris Johnson came out again a year later and spoke about it, there was a huge spike again. And we know that these things are wrong, and we've fact-checked them. But the problem is we haven't been able to spot every single time it's repeated. And being able to spot that lets us make smarter choices about the corrections that we ask for. It means that we can go to the regulators or the UK Standards, the UK Statistics Authority, the UKSA, and ask them to do their job of actually taking statistics out of circulation or speaking publicly about the inaccuracies. And that kind of insight is incredibly powerful for fact checkers and for those bodies. And at the moment, that data is very hard to get a hold of because it exists in the Facebook ecosystem or various parts that Google owns. So I think Facebook has recently released a research project in America with a lot of universities. I think they could definitely do the same in the UK. That would be fantastic. Actually having access to the scale of the problem on the platform will be great for fact checkers, for researchers, but also for policymakers.
I'd love to watch an episode of I wouldn't love to watch many episodes of Question Time, to be honest with you, but I'd love to watch an episode of Question Time with a kind of fact-checking worm squirming along beneath it. I think and actually I guess, have you had any conversations with media producers, broadcast producers, about incorporating kind of live fact-checking?
Yeah, we've actually done it a few times. In fact, I think we might have done it once. We were talking to the BBC QT guys once about doing that, but we've definitely done it on during the elections on actual stages. So Will, our director, will be on the side and sometimes he'll stop the conversation and do it. I think he's done it on Victoria Derbyshire before as well. So there are more and more people playing with that format. We haven't quite got it right yet, but I think it's slowly getting there, and I'm hoping that the tools will be the thing that make it easier, because if I can give a live fact-checking tool in the hands of every single producer, then they have the tools right then and there to be able to do the fact-checking themselves. We don't need to clone our team. We can just give it to them and they have access to that institutional knowledge.
You can put them in a position where it's like a more exciting, politically relevant dictionary corner.
Yeah, a really boring one though.
Well, yeah, I'm a fan of dictionary corner. I would be a fan of fact. I don't know what you'd call it, fact corner.
The full factory.
Somebody could come up with a better name for it than that.
We'll think about it.
I'm going to do something a bit different this week.
All right.
Just because I want to encourage people who are listening to do their own fact checking.
Mm-hmm.
And get in touch and solve for me the mystery of whether three particular stories that I have been told are true or false. And you're going to be my guinea pig as to whether they are true or false. So fact number one of the three potential true or false facts.
Yeah.
Does the word wharf stand for warehousing adjacent to riverfront?
No.
Okay. Question number two. Is the daddy long legs the most venomous insect in all of the world?
I'm also going to go no, but now I'm worried because they all sound like they might be like controversially yeses through some sort of weird caveat.
Someone's going to have to check the facts. Hopefully someone is going to check the facts. Question number three. Is it true that Wetherspoons is called Wetherspoons because it is the name of the founder's maths teacher who told him that he would amount to nothing?
I'm going to go yes.
That's the one that I think is most likely to be true as well.
I think I've read the Wetherspoons magazine and I could believe that that would be a tidbit in there.
Extra Wetherspoons fact. Every single Wetherspoons has a different carpet.
Oh, really?
Which I believe is a fact. But again, if anyone wants to check that fact, they can. Meevan, it's been really, really great talking to you. And I think the implications of some of the technology that you're working on could be really quite profound at a time when the conversations that we're having really need somebody to kind of anchor us in reality from time to time. So all power to your elbow with that. The last question that I want to ask you is around kind of reasons for optimism that you see in the kind of fact-checking community. So you're kind of working with groups of people who are looking to try and bring more accountability around the truth, perhaps, in society and particularly in political life. So why does the growth in the fact-checking movement make you feel optimistic?
Because for a long time, we haven't been able to push back against people in power at the speed that we have needed to stop bad information spreading. And as crazy and as scared as we are about technology that has cut down the time it takes or has increased the way that things can go viral, that is also an opportunity for us to use those mechanics in the same way to stop things spreading or to give people good information. So I think we have to think proactively about building trust. I think we have to think about data, not only gathering it, but its limits and what it can and can't tell us. And I think fact checkers are at the forefront at the moment, or at the front lines of a lot of those conversations. And the fact that there are more of them means that we can start gathering real evidence about the scale of the problems that we're working with.
And are there places that people that want to do some fact checking should be going to try and help out with the fact checking cause?
So there are different fact checkers in each country. In the UK, there's Full Fact. In America, there's PolitiFact and FullFact.org, and Washington Post has Glenn Kessler. But there is an international fact-checking community as well. So that is run by a guy called Alexios Manzales, and there's a whole list of the international fact-checking outfits around the world that you might want to get involved with on that site.
Great. Meevan, thanks very much.
Thank you.
So that's all for this week. We'll be back in a fortnight with an old friend, Jamie Bartlett, who'll be talking about his new book, The People Versus Tech. If you've checked our facts and want to feedback, you can get us on Twitter at @govt_vs_robots. My thanks as ever to Sky Redman for her help with the editing and production of this podcast. And if you've enjoyed the show, please do leave us a review, and you can subscribe on Acast or iTunes.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.